Welcome back. You are listening to Sexto Sol on 90.1 FM, KPFT in Houston. We have a call-in show. We're welcoming your calls this evening, 713-526-5738. The topic is a very intriguing one. It's based off a book that I just picked up this weekend called Why Do People Hate America? It's very, very informative book. It's an international bestseller from what I understand. But I want to go ahead and open up the lines this evening and let you have your say in terms of what this issue is about. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we've had protests all over Latin America. We've had protests in the Middle East, and many people who have spoken out since September 11th and since the intervention into Iraq and such. But I want to go ahead and get your opinions. I'm going to go ahead and bring our very first caller on this evening. We want to go ahead again and welcome you to call 713-526-5738. I've got Tabitha on the line. Tabitha, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for holding on for a bit. And I'm going to go ahead and give up the floor and let you have your say.
Realize that you were actually reading that book. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, no problem. I think I just want to get people's opinions as well on this issue.
I come from the perspective of having converted to Islam and actually having converted to the minority sect of Islam, the Shia Islam. I think what I'm seeing is that people, you know, see the United States supporting regimes like the monarchy in Saudi Arabia that, you know, oppresses Muslims, Muslims they're supposed to be, and oppresses women. And yet at the same time, they say that, you know, they invade countries like Iraq or Afghanistan to get rid of an oppressive, you know, tyrannical dictatorship or whatever. So you see some double speech like that sometimes. And even when we were bombing Iraq, we would take out things like the electrical supplies and stuff like that, but we would leave the Ministry of Oil alone, and we allowed the looting, you know, to occur, but yet we had only the Ministry of Oil protected. So a lot of people are looking at this and seeing only hypocrisy, and they're asking why, you know, why are you guys acting like this? And for a lot of people, it comes down to, you know, the equation equals out to a power struggle. And I think that's how a lot of people perceive us, and I think, you know, that's why. That's what they're looking at is our actions. So anyway, that's pretty much what I wanted to say for starter.
I appreciate you definitely giving us a call here. Again, I'm going to welcome others to call.
The first thing that I wanted to say, and I forgot that,
certainly,
is that when people demonstrate and protest against America, usually they're protesting against the American government. And even when they're out there saying things like down America, you know, they're not saying down to American people because they love people, you know, they love humanity. They're saying that they want, you know, they want the government to change, to act differently, or a new government, you know, different policies. So, you know, when it comes to the American people, they are very warm and welcoming, and they love the American people, as you can see by the reception that, you know, American people have in Iraq. But then, you know, after welcoming them and giving them a cup of tea, they say to them, please spread the word out there that, you know, we want you guys to treat us differently, please. So that's what I'm seeing, at least.
Definitely. So one of the things that came out in this book that I'm reading now, a general was quoted in there as saying that if he tries to put himself in the shoes of, say, a Palestinian, and if he said that if he were a Palestinian, he was seeing American tanks going through and killing his brothers and sisters, he would also hate what was going on as well.
Yes. I think there was a similar quote by Ehud Barak, actually.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's a really troubling type of thing because you do see a lot of inconsistency that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the question as it's posed becomes more of a political tool rather than people really asking why.
And a lot of times you actually see people asking, why do they hate us? And they never bother to answer except to quote what, you know, other people are saying. They hate us because we have our freedoms. They hate us because, you know, we have this kind of wealth. And, you know, if that were true, then people would not be coming over here to try to become citizens and get jobs and get the freedoms. they would be, you know, trying to attack these same things, but they're not. They're attacking, you know, symbols of economy, symbols of the government instead.
So, certainly.
Or what they see as world domination, you know.
Certainly so. Certainly. Yeah. I want to go ahead and welcome other people into this dialogue as well. You can give us a call at 713-526-5738. The name of the book is Why Do People Hate America? But even if you haven't read the book, it's certainly a very valid topic to start considering, to start thinking about. Why do people feel as they do about the United States and its policies? What is the solution, and how can we change the ways that our society runs? I said at the very beginning of the program, you run into a lot of other topics with this particular type of question in regard to protest. Does it accomplish anything? Are we really changing world opinion with the protests, when the fact of the matter is, regardless of the freedom of speech that is enjoyed in the United States, the policies are basically staying about the same. Nothing's really changing. Do these things really accomplish anything? So I want to go ahead. I'm going to get a little bit more into the book in a second, but again, I want to go ahead and welcome people to give us a call and be part of this discussion. 713-526-5738. This is 713-526-KPFT, if you prefer letters. One of the things that I thought was brought up in the book that I think is a very important thing to think about is in regard to the exporting by corporations of culture, particularly American culture, to different nations. One of the things that the authors point out is it's not really necessarily one kind of way, cultural imperialism or such, different political terms, but try to think of it in more of a biological way where people begin to spread out ideas just on their own. So it becomes to be a very, very interesting dynamic. I want to get into that in just a second, but I definitely want to go ahead and bring on our next caller, who is Alex. Again, I want to go ahead and welcome people to call 713-526-5738. Alex, are you with me?
Hi, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Great. I'm great. I can certainly hear you. Can okay. you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and give up the floor to you. Go ahead and have your say.
Okay. Okay, here's the thing. The last caller made a pretty decent point. The hypocrisy is the biggest thing. You know, we keep talking about, you know, that we want to spread democracy across the world, but that's the biggest BS. I mean, what the U.S. policy has always been is to put either a puppet regime that pretty much does what the United States wants it to do, or be a safe, let's say, regime, or a safe alternative to either far right, let's say, Islam or any other regime, as long as it is very safe for the United States in the region, which we should, you know, at this time is petroleum and things like that. So, you know, for example, in 1950s, there was a democratic coup d'etat in Iran where, you know, they elected their own prime minister. And after about 6 months, you know, with the help of CIA, you know, they brought back the Shah of Iran, which was a dictator who was a dictator and ruled the country with an iron fist for such a long time. But as long as, you know, he was helping the United States on its mission, you know, it was not a problem. And, you know, we also look at countries like Saudi Arabia and, you know, Egypt or Jordan, which are monarchies, you know, and have been like that for years and years. And as long as they're not a threat to us in here, you know, we continue to treat them as, you know, our allies. And at the same time, you know, try to, you know, look at other countries, let's say, for example, Iran, which you know, does not, you know, dance to our music here. So, you know, we call them our enemies, you know. So, you know, it's very hypocritical, you know, to look at it that way. You know, if you want to get, you have to respect others. I guess is what I'm trying to say. You have to respect others, you know, at the same time. You should not look at them down as inferiors and for you to take, let's say, a democracy to them. You know, most of those people, you know, do just fine as long as, you know, us here keep our nose away from, you know, their business. You know, if the United States has not helped the Saddam Hussein regime for so many years, you know, he probably would not have been in power for such a long time. And, you know, as long as he served our purposes during the, you know, 80s and then maybe early part of the 90s, you know, he was just fine. But, you know, so, you know, there are a lot of things, you know. At the same time, you know, the Israeli-Palestinian issue, you know, comes about too, where, you know, obviously we are the biggest supporter of Israel, but at the same time we are thinking that, you know, we can be in the middle, you know, helping them, you know, make peace with the Palestinians, but which you know, principally does not make sense, because, you know, in order for you to be a peacemaker, you have to be neutral, and we are not neutral at all. You know, I think the Europeans could probably do a better job at that.
Certainly so. It is really interesting when you see a country coming into another area claiming to be the one who's going to mediate the peace, when there's obviously very clear political objectives,
obviously,
if there's going to be a certain outcome versus another.
Exactly. And, you know, we keep talking about, you know, the people, you know, hating the United States and stuff like that, but, you know, like you, just like your last caller said, you know, nobody hates the, you know, the American people at all. And even the United States government, you know, I don't think it's really that, you know, hate or love, you know, as long as, you know, they stay out of people's business. You know, people don't want to be, you know, dictated to what to do. You know, and let's say, for example, if you live in if you're a Palestinian, let's say, you know, if your family, your brother, your sister, your mother was killed, you know, by the Israelis, by the Israeli tanks, by the Israeli planes, and we support them, at the same time, you know, they may, you know, they may relate the Israelis with, you know, Israeli occupation with the, you know, direct support of the United States, you know, which, with billions of dollars and, you know, tanks and the army and all those things. So, you know, that you know, adds up to the, you know, to the feeling of, you know, of the people in that part of the world. So, you know, it needs to be more even-handedness, I think, throughout the region. You know, that part of the world is sort of so volatile, you know, that our policies today and what have we've done, you know, in the Middle East for the past, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, unfortunately has not been even-handed at all. And that's why we've seen so many, you know, terrorists and things like that, you know, happening, you know, in our backyard, you know. So in order, you know, to be, you know, even-handed, or in order to be, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you have to be even-handed if you want others to respect you, or you have to not to stick your business, you know, your nose into others' business if you want to be respected, and if you want to be, and you have to look others as equal, not as inferior, and that where you have to, you know, as a white man's burden, you have to bring democracy to them, you have to do things for them. You know, all they want from you most probably is, you know, not to stick your business into your nose into their business. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. I'm real happy that you brought up the Shah of Iran a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And especially the CIA support of the Shah of Iran, because anybody, if no one has read a history book about the Shah of Iran, I will tell you right off the bat, the Shah of Iran made Saddam Hussein look like Ronald McDonald.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Exactly. He was such a bad guy. And, you know, before that, his father, his father was the king of Iran, and obviously they kicked him out. He was kicked out by the British and the U.S. because, you know, he was nationalistic, and, you know, he wasn't singing to the music, to their music, or to the Western style music, to what they wanted here. Anyways, and they brought his son, which was a, you know, absolute dictator, and, you know, he had the Savak and, you know, the rest, the very infamous military or internal security police, which, you know, oppressed and killed so many people. And, you know, we play our cards the way we do, and then at the end, when things change, let's say, you know, the way they change in Iran, then we think why the Iranians, for example, you know, the people were so mad, so angry, so upset with the U.S. policies. And, you know, obviously it would make sense that, you know, what has happened, you know, was the result of the wrong policies, you know, throughout the years. So, you know,
absolutely,
that's the way I see it.
Absolutely. I want to go ahead and welcome other people to
get
involved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Alex.
Bye-bye.
Take care. I want to go ahead and welcome other people to get involved with this dialogue. The discussion is an open question. Why do people hate America? the book of the same name is something I just checked out recently, and wanted to go ahead and kind of throw that out as an open question to people. What do people think about the whole protests that have been going on all over the world around U.S. intervention specifically, but these protests have also rolled into a much larger context of how U.S. intervention works all over the world. The last caller brought up a number of things in regard to past interventions. To drop a little bit of information to people who are listening about some past interventions in Latin America, we can talk about 1918 with Panama, where there was a U.S. Army doing police duty during unrest after some elections that were happening in Honduras in 1919. We're talking about the Marines who went in after an election campaign in Guatemala in 1920. There was a two-week intervention to fight the Unionists that were going, that were organizing in that country. To a little bit more closer history, you're talking about Panama in 1958. There were protests that erupted after a confrontation with troops. So we have lots and lots of history that have gone up to much more current than that, but those are just a few examples of things that have been going on all over the world that the U.S. has been involved with from an intervention standpoint. So it's really, really critical to understand what these types of topics mean in the context of history. We want to go ahead and bring on our next caller on the line. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Great. Let me go ahead and have your thoughts.
Well, one of the things that they've talked about was that, like in Iran, the young people or the next generation that has come up, that has grown up without American influence in their country, has grown to maybe even admire the United States in a certain way, especially for what the freedoms of the people, I guess, is what they mostly like. And the correlation was given, this talk I heard, that wherever the United States has not been for a while, the liking for the United States grows. It's only when they're involved in their home politics does the hatred seem to grow. And that ought to be pretty obvious. What's going on is we're really messing with their countries and maybe taking their resources, whatever it is, trying to rule their rulers to calm down an area that doesn't want to help our particular goals and a worldwide influence.
What in your perspective can change that perception from people and that reality as well? I don't want to make it sound like it's just perception, but obviously there's a reality going on. In your opinion, how do we change that?
That is the quagmire. A change in policy to where we try to make the countries around the world support themselves and hope that trying to build them will inspire them to work in the direction that we want to go rather than try to influence their government and culture to take care of that. Most of the time that's done brutally as far as changing their governments and the culture. We got to admit, our culture doesn't fit in everywhere. I mean, even in Europe, it's not seen as the absolute way to go. There's a lot of Western influences, but what I can see is we got to try a different tact. Seems like in the days when the Peace Corps was strong, those type of movements that try to do things for people didn't always turn out rosy, but they gave the world a more liking for the U.S. and I can't say that it's just dollars that's doing it, but people actually doing things with the people in other countries, whether it be Africa, the Middle East, Asia, wherever. It's got to be different than setting up the governments.
Certainly so. And I agree with you. That's really the quagmire, trying to figure out exactly how that can all be balanced. Obviously, it's going to take a change in your politicians and the political direction, but we're also swimming against this current of history that isn't exactly pretty. it's very, very difficult for us to overcome that and to work to overcome that, both as a people, because I think a lot of people, just in general, the public, has a skewed perception, has been fed a skewed perception of what American intentions are overseas. So I think it's going to be, it's a long process. It's going to be real difficult, I would think.
Our people for sure have a messed up perception of what we're doing overseas. I think we're led by the media and whatever propaganda is coming out of how much good we're doing, when obviously when you look up and down the Americas and the Middle East, Africa, we're really not doing what we're saying we're doing, and especially here within the last few years since 9/11, the military increase, it's our way or the highway. We'll lay the highway if necessary.
It's true, unfortunately. It's very, very troubling, but it's accurate.
When the previous administration was in, we were still on the same track, but we were engaged in trying to maybe solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflicts. We failed. I don't think we failed miserably, but they were. I believe it was even doomed to fail. But we gave the world and the people there the idea that we were trying to. Even though our policies were different, we didn't come in like Mr. Bush and shoot him the bird and say, this is the way it's going to be.
Right.
It seems like our troubles started to triple and quadruple just as soon as that attitude was shown openly.
Right. And I think that's what a lot of the world has had a problem with thus far, is that where your previous administration, while imperfect, seemed to take more of a diplomatic approach, and this one currently seems to say, well, this is what we want, and if you don't agree with us, then we're happy to go ahead and do whatever we want to do on our own or with whatever allies we can shore up. And if you don't like it, that's pretty much tough luck.
And it seems like the people here ought to take the point that the traditional allies aren't there.
Yeah, certainly.
Bulgaria stood up in this thing, but from what I understood, they're supposed to get one of the three air bases that's in Germany now.
I heard about that, too.
$1.8 billion, plus what did they offer other than a vote that never came to fruition, because they knew they were going to lose that vote.
Exactly. I'm going to go ahead and need to move on to our next call.
Okay.
Thank you very much for giving us a call. We have an open dialogue this evening. The discussion is basically to the open question, why do people hate America? There is a new book out of the same title, and we've been engaging each of our callers on that particular topic, wanting to go ahead and get your opinions on it. Have you read the book or haven't read the book? It's a very, very interesting read. I've tried to insert some of those ideas that came from the book into this discussion, but I also want to go ahead and get people's opinions and get your feelings on not only why we have the troubles that we seem to overseas, we being the United States, people who are in North America, whether you are colonized or not, we are fortunately or unfortunately part of all this. So therefore, how do we as a people change that? I'm going to go ahead and bring on our next caller. Kurt?
Kurt, hi, Ernesto.
Hey, how are you doing? I want to go ahead and I'm going to give up the floor. I want your opinions.
Okay, well, we're talking about why people hate America and empire building and so forth. And,
right.
We're looking at we've always dabbled a little bit in empire. And, but, you know, I'd like to compare, like, the living under in an American satellite state compared to, like, say, one from the Soviet Union or the British Empire or something like that. And I don't want to go back to the Romans, but like in 68, you know, if you would had a choice between living in, let's say, Poland or Czechoslovakia, pretty much under the thumb of the Soviets, or in Guatemala, you know.
Right.
I mean, where would you want to live, you know? We seem to be riding on this whole thing about how we, you know, the Marshall Plan and so forth back in World War II, and as if having a regime change by the United States is a good thing, You know, in other words, it's a move toward democracy or something like that. But the truth of the matter is, if you know, if we look at this hemisphere that we run, right, and which is and look at Latin America and South America to a great extent, and the sort of regimes that we install, and then what happens to the people that live in those countries, you could have to come to the conclusion that the Soviet Unions are kitty cats, and these other empires are essentially nice guys compared to what we do to people, you know, and because we've done some real damage as far as regime changes, and what, 243 of them since 1776.
Exactly.
So I don't think that that people outside the country have any illusions about what might happen if we come in to change a regime, no matter how bad they are. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, Saddam Hussein was rough, but you know, compared to Guatemala, he's an angel, you know?
Right, exactly. And that was kind of the point that I was making with one of the other callers. When you compare Saddam Hussein to, say, the Shah of Iran, there's no comparison. Honestly, you take a look at someone like the Shah of Iran, who had his own secret police and killed many, many, many people and tortured many people over a course of time. That was somebody who was very actively supported by the United States. You want to look at Pinochet, Allende, a lot of other people who were supported by the United States, who basically straight out massacred quite a number of people as unionists or as activists or organizers or anybody who was an opponent to his or her regime. Generally was his regime, but those regimes, anyone who opposed them was basically disappeared, killed off, and whatnot.
Or writing the wrong sort of poem.
Yeah, that too, unfortunately.
Right.
It's a troubling, very, very troubling thing. I mean, I'm kind of curious. I understand that many Iraqi people seem to at least express to the mainstream media that there's a bit of relief that Mr. Hussein is out of office. However, I think in the same breath, they're also saying, well, what's next? Because I think a lot of them understand that this isn't a democratic movement that has deposed this leader, but rather the United States has come in and decided to play a bit of a shell game and decide, you don't know who they're getting, basically.
Well, I would say, you know, what, I mean, I think the statement has to be clear that essentially if we put a democratic regime in Iraq, that would be, you know, that would be really out of the ordinary for us. You know,
certainly.
That's not what we do.
Certainly so.
So that would be kind of denying history to suspect that that's what's going to happen. And you know, no matter what happens, you know, it's going to be a puppet government. They're going to spend all that money for nothing. So.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Money we supposedly don't have or whatnot. So.
No, we don't have it.
Right.
I mean, or at least I don't.
Well, obviously they decided to cut all these social programs because we don't have any money for that, but we have $70 billion to go ahead and spend on propping up a government in Iraq. So.
Yeah, and this gives kids go to school in trailers. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I know kids just down not too far from KPFT who are sitting in overcrowded classrooms, don't have books, don't have a lot of things, but yet we can go ahead and spend $70 billion for a plane to drop a bunch of bombs. It's really screwed up priorities, very, very screwed up priorities we have in many cases.
Okay, well, I'll see you later, Nessa.
Kurt, thank you very, very much, man.
Bye-bye.
You take it easy. We are having an open discussion tonight. The topic is, why do people hate America? Although it's a very loaded question. It's obviously very, very political in a lot of senses. The book that I have been reading is of the same name, Why Do People Hate America? And it prompted me to want to open up this dialogue to each and every one of you to answer that question, to kind of wrestle with it a little bit. I've, again, brought out some issues that came out in the book. I'm going to go ahead and bring on some more callers in just a moment. Our number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I'm going to go ahead and bring Freddie on the line right now. Freddie, how you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I want to get your perspective on this.
No, my perspective is, whose democracy are we talking about? When you
True.
Talk about a democracy, who's democracy?
True enough.
Who creates this democracy?
Exactly.
And who's from, who's? What are they talking about? They're talking about creating a government for them?
Exactly. Well, it's kind of interesting because
they're sending people to rewrite their constitution?
Right.
It's like, come on.
Exactly.
It's like, no, man. I'm a teacher, and it's like, no way.
Right.
You're teaching, we're talking about teaching these kids about democracy, but we're talking about going over there and creating a government for them and then locking people out of the meetings.
Definitely.
Who this government doesn't agree with. I say we, but I'm messing up and saying we. It's them.
Right.
Not we.
Yeah, exactly. And I made the same mistake because we talk about we, but in a lot of senses, it isn't the people that are making these decisions. It's a lot of other people who have a lot at stake financially, politically, and all these other things that have a lot more at stake than you and I do.
Exactly. These people are really blowing my mind right now with what they're doing.
Definitely.
And then you get people that argue in their favor. And that blows your mind even more. That these are educated people that you're talking to, and they're arguing in favor of what Baby Bush is doing.
Exactly.
It's Baby Bush and the boys, right?
good enough point. Certainly so.
Yeah.
It's interesting how we're exporting and how that all works, or how that turns out in the end game. I've heard it likened before to a used car, where it looks really good when you get it, but when you've got it after about a year, you see how it actually turns out to be. And I've mentioned a few things about interventions a little bit earlier in the show, but I definitely feel where you're coming from.
No, and then you look at what they did when they read the Declaration of Occupation
right.
the other day.
Right.
The occupation it was the declaration that they read.
Yeah.
And they expect these people, knowing the history of this region,
mm-hmm.
they expect these people just to sit back and say, okay, you can do whatever you want with this.
Right.
No, anybody who's ever studied that region knows damn well that you cannot do that.
Exactly.
Not there.
Exactly.
Not anywhere, but here it's even more of a hotbed.
Mm-hmm. True enough.
So I guess that's it.
Beautiful. Freddie, thank you very, very much for your comments.
No problem.
Go ahead and move on. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
You too. I got Mark on line two. Mark, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and give up the floor. I've been letting everybody else have their say. Go for it, my man.
Really, I just wanted to say that the main reason that the world in general hates America is because when we do go into a place, and even in our presentation of our viewpoint throughout the world, we tend to export our values and ignore theirs.
Certainly. One of the other callers made a point earlier about how a lot of the countries who decide they're not going to dance to a particular tune end up being treated as inferiors or somehow backward because they have a different perspective.
It's not only the perspective as it is their entire belief system
mm-hmm.
that we totally ignore. As an example, we value the rights of women. We value the rights of multi-belief systems like religion.
Mm-hmm.
We value the rights of all classes, no matter what their income.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe in a rule by law. Now, when
well, that
we...
that plays out into practice, though, is a little bit iffy, but I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, well... These are principles that when we go into an area, and even when we're not there, I'm trying to think of the place. I can't remember where it is, but in women in general, and the Muslim countries in practice, we have seen a lot of reporting about how women are minimized.
Mm-hmm.
That is a belief that, though it's valued to us, and in reality of fact, it's not true that the rights of women are minimized in most Muslim countries, except for the really extreme ones. We tend to project our opinion as though they need to believe the way that we do. This creates a lot of political unrest, and so their leaders tend to look down on us, and the people whose construct of reality is based on what they believe to be true also are easily driven to express their distrust of our belief system.
Excellent point, Mark. Excellent point. I agree with where you're coming from completely, because you can't... It's interesting how we take different perceptions of different nations or different cultures and how those become this collective history that everybody kind of agrees upon, but it may not necessarily even be true in some cases.
Exactly.
It's pretty frightening. I'm going to have to move on to a few more callers just to let people know who we're on hold. We've got a packed phone line, and we've got a few callers on hold. We're going to go ahead and try to get to everybody. We're about 12 minutes out left on the show. I'm going to go ahead and bring everybody on. Mark, I really appreciate your perspective. I think you just brought out some ideas that I think everybody really needs to think about.
Thank you so much.
Very, very much. You are listening to Sexto Soul on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. I have got, let me take a look, my list. I've got Cornelius, David, and Eric coming on up. I got one more as well, but let me go ahead and bring these first three on the line. And I have Cornelius. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. I want to go ahead and let you have your say.
Okay, earlier you mentioned the whole idea of our, like, widespread exportation of our culture, you know, to these different countries.
Right.
And, like, I think, you know, we're, like, spreading this, like, disposable, Americanized culture to all these, like, you know, lesser developed countries. And I think what it boils down to is that, like, they don't have the funk. And, you know, you can't fake the funk.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I appreciate your perspective. I am going to go ahead and bring David on the line. David, you there?
Yes.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and let you speak. Go for it.
All right. Well, I think a lot of the way that the people hate America or Americans is they don't really know the people of America. They know how the government and big corporations work.
Right.
And therefore, it really puts the American people in jeopardy. A lot of things that the government does or big corporations do that come from this country, like what's going on in South America, like what's going on in Africa, with the oil things, with the environment. We want to pursue their way of life to improve, but yet a lot of the things that we do and leave behind are just destructive and dangerous for the people there. It's just like big corporations don't have to answer to anybody.
Certainly.
And you look at the whole picture, and that's who's running everything.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that I think kind of begins to get lost in the equation in a lot of senses. People begin to talk about, well, we want to protest the government or whatever else. And in a lot of senses, corporations end up running a lot of things.
I mean, the American people are not like the government, and that's something that they don't see.
Right.
Unless they get over here. And then they get to meet people and know people, and it's completely different in a lot of ways that they thought it would be.
Right.
And that's the chance that they don't get to see. That's one of the things that's unfortunate for us and unfortunate for them also.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we'll just have to see how this, all of this pursuing develops and what it comes out to, because, like I said, it's something they don't see and something they don't know. They just take it by what's been done to them by either the government or big corporations, and it's not fair to us, but that's just something we've been labeled at.
True enough.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
I appreciate your call. I appreciate it very, very much. You are listening to Sexto Soul on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. Getting towards the end of the show, I've got two more calls. I'm going to go ahead and wrap these up, and then we're going to close up the program for this evening. I have got Eric on the line. Eric, are you there?
Yes, Yeah.
I wanted you to go ahead and have your say. You've been holding for a long time. I appreciate you holding with us.
Yeah, I just got a few quick comments.
Sure.
After 9/11, I really did a lot of soul searching, and I wanted to understand why these people hate us so much. So it was a very, you know, open-end thing, and learned a lot. One of the things I had a problem with 9/11 is us calling the war on terrorism a war. It should be a police action. It's a civil thing. And then the next thing is having our president get up and try to explain to the American people, which some people buy, that these people are envious of us.
Right.
And somebody made a comment earlier about what would you rather do, live in Warsaw, Poland, or, you know, some other American satellite. But my problem with that is most of these people don't know how Americans live, and how can they envy us? You know, they don't have any concept of what America's like. So to say people are envious of us is very arrogant.
Right.
And it very arrogant. I mean, just downright arrogant. And then the only other thing I wanted to say is that from everything I've learned and protesting and talking to people is that America goes out of the world in two different ways. One is a humanitarian through secular or religious organizations, and those are all fine and dandy, like Peace Corps and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the problems people have with America is when we want to take their resources for our corporate dollar.
Right.
And the bottom line is that the machine's broken, and as long as America keeps using more resources than everybody else, and we keep chasing the dollar instead of, you know, peace, then, you know, America is going to continue to get into these conflicts, and innocent people will die.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. I really do. Unfortunately, it's going to take a complete change in perspective on where we decide our political objectives will be accomplished.
Oh,
right,
man.
Now, it turns to be a money thing, and it needs to be turned into more of a diplomacy, more of a long-term goal as opposed to a profit-oriented goal.
Right. I mean, you know, we're chasing, you know, we care more about the dollar than we care about human life. And as long as we care about the dollar more than human life, then, you know, we're not going to care whether it's people here or overseas. And the system's broken. But that's all I got to say. Thanks.
Great. Great. I appreciate your call, Eric. I've got Red on line one. Red, you there?
Yes. Well, I have a little bit different perspective than a lot of these people. I was actually an IT manager, a large company, Brown and Root, and traveled extensively. And, of course, I see that it's more, we have problems that were commitments that we've made in these countries. Like, I was in France probably 15 years ago, and it was just noticeable that they hated Americans. I mean, I think with them, it was more of the politics. They're super liberal, where we were fairly conservative. And it's been that way for years, and most people just weren't aware of it. But you take the Middle East. I mean, when I was in those countries, you know, we stayed away from them. If I went over there, usually Brown and Root, we were going in for some corporation and doing some work, and we would maybe land in an airport in Algeria and jump on a helicopter and go straight out to the oil company base out there, because those people just hated you. They had regime changes. But, I mean, I think that all stems, that whole area and the whole Muslim thing stems from the fact that we propped up the Israelis after World War II, and we made a commitment there to support them. And they hate those people. They would slaughter that country if they had the chance to do it, I guarantee you. And we made this commitment, and we're supposed to be backing it up. We've made commitments our government has all over the country. Same thing in Russia. You know, they used to hate us. Now you go in there and they're looking at you. I mean, I used to have problems with microwaves being shut down in the middle of the night because the government in Azerbaijan basically controls the microwave for the whole country, and they did maintenance at 12 o'clock. It's such a whole different world. And down in Africa, I'm going to tell you, everybody loves the Peace Corps and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys, when they come in there, they supported the government. They went in and put out supposedly AIDS vaccines and stuff, you know, trying to stop the spread. It wasn't AIDS that they were doing. It was, what was it? So polio or something that they were trying to, smallpox, they were trying to give these vaccinations.
Right.
And there in Germany, they were making a deal that you're not supposed to give it to people that have HIV. And we killed thousands of people down there because the governments were pushing it out instead of giving the new smallpox vaccine here. So we've done just, and plus we try to impose the religious values on them. That's the funny thing. A lot of the people mm-hmm. Volunteers that go over there, they literally carry their religious values with them. Those people don't want a democracy like we want. They want a democracy that has religion in it.
A theocracy.
Yes, and we have a problem with that, and so we get into these big conflicts, you know, and so it's too complex a thing to try to narrow it down to my viewpoint. I think it's just policies and things we've implemented, and I think we need to take a lot of the money and the changing and things that we're trying to do and get out of those countries and kind of let it flush out. You try to do something over in Iraq, and I got, frankly, I think that they're headed for some, just like we did in our early democratic times, I think those people are headed for probably a lot of changes and battles and religious battles, and I don't think you can easily implement a democracy in a country that is not very tolerant of each other, because they are so, you know, it's a more religious type, like you say, a theocracy is what they really want, and they're going to battle between each other.
Certainly. Red, I really appreciate your perspective. I'm going to have to wrap up for our very last caller. Thank you very much for calling us. I think you brought some ideas that I think people need to hear as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Gloria, you're the last caller.
Yes, I couldn't agree with the previous caller more. Democracy depends on an informed public to vote, and I don't see where America's quite gotten there yet. Our government is the American people as far as the foreign countries are concerned. To say that people, they like Americans, but just not the American foreign policy, well, that is an extension of each individual, because we're the ones who voted them in. They must be doing what we want them to do. We want to feather our own nests, and we're going to vote for the people that seem or come on or project that they will get us our comfortable place here, no matter what it takes to in other parts of the world, without appreciating that these people, instead of being at town meetings and trying to figure out how they should put their country together, they're slashing their heads with swords today and beating themselves with chains. They are not going to have a democracy in the Disneyland sense that most people, common Americans, seem to think of democracy. I don't think the American people are sophisticated enough to realize what our government's up to and what pawns we all are.
Excellent point.
Well, if we voted more, we would probably have not so many wars, and not this one.
Certainly. So, Gloria, I really appreciate your perspective. I've got to wrap up the show this
sure.
evening, but thank you very much for calling. You have been listening to Sexto Sol on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. Stay tuned for the BBC next, and then Stacey Davis. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned.